It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our series of conversations about big ideas in partnership with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. The Gazette is hosting a nonpartisan statewide learning experience in conjunction with the launch of their new magazine called Iowa Ideas. They'll be holding events around the state, culminating in a two-day conference in Cedar Rapids in September. Tomorrow, they'll be at the Iowa Memorial Union in Iowa City, and the focus is on higher education. This hour, we'll talk about the challenges that high tuition creates. We'll do a cost-benefit analysis, explore less expensive alternatives, and even throw out some big ideas for making college more affordable in the future. I'll talk with a recent grad with plenty of debt, Elizabeth Sidrell of Iowa College Age, and Liang Chi Wei of Northeast Iowa Community College. Also, Christopher Morphew of the University of Iowa will be here later on. But my first guest is Susan Bonenkamp. She is a mother of two from Marion. Her son is in sixth grade, so college is still out on the horizon for him, but her daughter is a junior in high school, and college is right around the corner. Susan is with me now, and Susan, has college always been the plan for your daughter?
It sure has. Both my husband and I attended college, and it was kind of always a given that that would be the next step.
So back when you went to college, of course, the cost was very different back then, but did you need to seek financial assistance?
I did not. I was very fortunate that my parents did pay for all of 4 years undergraduate. They would pay for undergraduate, not anything beyond that, but they did pay for undergraduate. So I was very, very lucky in that sense.
So, of course, parents everywhere are watching as college cost goes up pretty much every single year. As you're looking at your daughter going to college, how does money play into the equation?
It's the number one factor, to be honest. Her dream school is over $43,000 a year, and that's just mind-blowing. It produces a lot of anxiety as a parent, but she's also very smart, and she knows that we will be looking at all different types of, you know, in-state school. Her dream school is in Nashville, and she really hopes to go there. But the only way that we'll look at it is if a school, we know that they're really giving and that they help meet the financial needs for a family.
Does your daughter have a pretty clear idea of what she wants to do with an education?
She sure does. Yeah, she's always wanted to go into medicine, pre-medicine. Really, her dream job is a physician's assistant. That's what she's aiming for.
All right. So that's somewhat unusual for a high school junior to have that clear an idea. That must feel like part of the battle is won.
Exactly. I mean, she's always been a super driven girl that, you know, she's our firstborn and always kind of known what she's wanted in life. So we are lucky in that sense. Our son is the total opposite. So we have both.
As you're looking at choosing where she'll go to college, I mean, you mentioned her dream school, but knowing what she wants to do, how are you weighing the benefit of a college education against the cost?
Right. And that's really important. And we are just kind of just starting at the beginning of the journey of looking at schools. We are, as we go to schools, we are talking to them about their physician's assistant programs. A lot of the schools have a five-year program, for instance, that you can get. If you get accepted as a freshman, you finish in 5 years, and you're a physician's assistant at the end of those 5 years. So looking at, I do think that the job that she has in the future will be worth the, if for instance, if she comes out with school loans, I think that she'll be able to make those loan payments and make a good living. I think that's also really important to look at. But she had mentioned, well, why don't we look at Purdue? And I looked at her and I said, we're not going to go to an out-of-state school that you can go to, you know, Iowa State and have a great experience. I graduated from Iowa State, great school, great education. I have three siblings that two siblings went out of state. And so I've come from a mixed bag of where everyone went. And I just don't believe in paying out-of-state tuition somewhere where you can have a state school experience that's great here in Iowa. But she really hopes to go somewhere out of state. So as a parent, the biggest anxiety is saying, wow, what if I can't meet my kids? What if I can't make her dreams happen? And we've done a good job saving for retirement, but we have not done a good job of saving for college. And I look back and I regret that. But when they're little, you just think, oh, that's so far off. You know, we're going to put money into retirement. And now here we sit facing a graduate that may go to a school that's pretty expensive.
How about financial assistance? What kind of research have you been able to do so far to figure out what kind of possibilities you might have for getting help in paying for this?
As a junior, there isn't much you can do until senior year. So junior year is really about exploring what kind of campus they want, what kind of college they're looking at, what career are they looking at. And then you have them apply. And that, of course, the pressure on that to get in is really, really high, too. And then the way I look at it is we'll apply for schools. We'll see where she gets in. We'll sit down. We'll do the number crunching. We'll say, this is your options. You can go in-state and graduate debt-free, or you can go out-of-state and have debt.
Do you feel like there's plenty of support for you as a parent? Because this is almost going to be like a part-time job looking at scholarship applications, college applications, et cetera.
Absolutely. And, you know, really, and she's very busy. She does a lot of extracurricular things. So I'm going to take that on. I'm going to be applying for every scholarship that's out there that we can potentially get. And that will kind of be a part-time job for me. But our school is great. I mean, they send out messages all the time. They do a good job of saying, this is what you need to know. This is what to expect. So I do feel that we've had the benefit of that.
And do you have friends with older kids who've paved this road before you who can give you some guidance?
I sure have. Yes, I sure have. Yes. But I'm the youngest of four, and my husband's the youngest of six. So between the two of us, we have several nieces and nephews that have gone to various different schools, and they've all approached it differently. And so we've been able to see how it works in every different scenario.
So facing these big decisions with your daughter, what's your greatest fear right now?
My greatest fear is that she's going to get into her dream school, and I'm going to look at her, or we're going to have to look at her and say, this just isn't going to work. You know, it's just not going to happen. And that is my biggest fear. Cause I just, like, I'll do whatever I can to make sure that we can afford it, but it could mean me working till I'm 80. I don't know, you know, but that's just how we parent. So I guess I just do worry about maybe, you know, not being able to, or having to say, you know, but she's also a smart kid, and she's going to look at that and say, well, you know, it totally makes sense for me to go to this school because I got more money, you know. So,
well, Susan, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Yep. I've appreciated it.
Susan Bonenkamp is a mother of two from Marion, looking at paying for college in the very near future. And joining me now is Elizabeth Cedrill. She is a spokeswoman for Iowa College Age. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
We appreciate the opportunity.
And we were just listening to Susan. She said, well, we did a really good job saving for retirement. We did not do a good job saving for college. Is this a story you hear a lot?
It is a story we hear a lot. And the first thing I want to say about Susan, her daughter is really fortunate to have a parent who is so engaged and active in the college application process. So she's already a step ahead of a lot of students with that. But I also hope that there are parents out there of young children, even preschoolers, who listened to what Susan said and took that to heart. Because just like any kind of savings plan, the earlier that you start, the farther your money is going to go. I would encourage people to go to the iowacollegeaid.gov website. We have a free publication about saving and investing for college. And there's a chart that's really telling that shows how far the same amount of money will go if you start when your kid is a preschooler versus in junior high versus in high school.
Well, and of course, when you start, when you have a child, 18 years seems like a long time. But when you're in the mix, it goes really fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't have children, but I'm told those years fly by.
That is true. All right. So when a parent comes to you and says, I haven't saved for college, I mean, where do you even start at that point?
Well, at that point, you start looking at various forms of financial aid. Susan said that she was anticipating applying for scholarships being kind of a part-time job, and that is an excellent attitude because it does take a lot of time to weigh all the financial aid options that are out there. But when you look at the potential benefits, the time and the effort that you put into it can pay off in a very big way. And Susan also asked a really smart question. She said, not just thinking about the loans, but thinking about the loans versus her daughter's ability to repay those loans once she graduates. And that's another really crucial question. In Iowa, the average amount of student debt that graduates come out of school with is a little under $30,000. But you also have to look at the difference in lifetime earnings between a person with a high school diploma and a person with a college degree. And looking at yearly earnings, it's about 65% more for a person with the college degree. And over a lifetime, that stretches out to more than $1 million. And I would also encourage parents, students who are looking at this equation, how much am I going to borrow, how much am I going to owe versus how much am I going to make, to go to the U.S. Department of Education College Scorecard. It is an excellent resource that shows things like what's the average debt that graduates come out of any particular school carrying, and what are their average salaries when they graduate.
All right. So it sounds like the answer to the question, at least from your perspective, of is college still worth it considering the high cost of education? That sounds like a resounding yes from you.
It definitely is. And it's not just about the money either. In all kinds of benchmarks, as in terms of health and wellness and happiness, we find that college graduates do better.
One of the other things that I talked about with Susan, she says her daughter has a very clear idea of what she wants to do, which is pretty rare in a high school junior. Is that an added advantage for them?
For her, it probably will be. One of the things that adds to the cost of college, unfortunately, is changing majors because it adds to the amount of time that students spend in school. So going in knowing what you want to do, that really reduces the likelihood that she's going to change paths.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me is Elizabeth Cedrill. She is spokeswoman for Iowa College Aid. We're talking about the high cost of higher education this hour. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with a recent grad who graduated from college carrying a large debt load. We'll talk about how she feels about her college education and the future in just a moment. You're also welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're continuing our series of conversations about big ideas in partnership with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Their series is called Iowa Ideas. They're traveling around the state holding conversations about some of the big problems facing Iowa right now. Tomorrow, they'll be at the Iowa Memorial Union in Iowa City, and the focus will be on higher education. We are focusing on the challenge of paying for college. And my next guest is Danielle Ferguson. She's learned all about that firsthand. She graduated from Iowa State University last May, and she's now working as a journalist in South Dakota. Hello, Danielle.
Hi.
Thank you for being here, and congratulations on graduating. Congratulations on being a recent graduate who is also employed. So,
Thank you.
But when you graduated from college, you found that you were carrying a significant debt load. How much debt are you dealing with right now?
Yes, I've got about $40,000.
All right. And when you were planning for college, did you realize early on that you were going to need to take on that much student loan debt to make it through?
Well, I knew I would have to take out student loans. There was just really no other way we were going to be able to pay for college. My older sisters took out student loans. My mom and stepdad were kind of like, this is just the way it's going to have to be. So, I mean, I knew I was going to have to, and I was preparing for it, but, I mean, I wasn't necessarily preparing for that much. Some things happened throughout college where kind of had to take out a larger amount in the middle there. So life.
Right. Life does happen. So at this point, I mean, now that you're at work, have you made a plan for paying off that debt?
I did. Iowa State actually opened up a student loan education office when I was a senior. And they required everyone who took out federal student loans to go in and do like an exit interview. And that was actually really helpful. I sat down with a financial aid counselor, and she helped me budget out my life basically. And right now I'm on a plan to pay them all off in about 10 years. I definitely have to keep a budget, but right now it seems very doable.
So let's talk about that budget. I mean, what kinds of things are you doing right now so that you can afford to pay off your student loan debt? You have several roommates, right?
Yep. Yes. I live in a house with three other girls. Didn't think I'd have to do that post-college, but it's fine. it actually does save me quite a bit of money, and that's worth it for me, and I get along with them really well. I definitely don't eat out very often. I plan out a lot of different things. I keep a certain amount of money for a certain amount of things, and like I budget out for gas, and I budget out for food every other week, and I mean, I still have like my phone payment, my car payment, my rent and all that, but it's still very doable.
As you make plans for the future, do you feel like the student loan debt is holding you back in some ways?
A little bit. I'm very lucky in that the rent in Sioux Falls, the cost of living in Sioux Falls is pretty low. It's very affordable. I mean, as a journalist, I can kind of go anywhere and do my job, which is awesome. But I mean, any other bigger city is probably going to have a higher cost of living, which has kind of been in the back of my mind for sure. So I plan on staying here for at least a little while and trying to save up some money so I can hopefully do that in the future.
Yeah. If you didn't have this student loan debt, how do you think you'd be doing things differently?
I still would have come here first. I do really love Sioux Falls and I love my job a lot. But I probably would be looking to maybe move to a bigger city a little sooner. I have three roommates.
Well, Danielle, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
That's no problem. Thank you for having me.
Danielle Ferguson is a recent graduate from Iowa State University. She's working as a journalist in South Dakota and will spend at least the next 10 years paying off her student loan debt. Elizabeth Cedrell is still with me. She is a spokeswoman for Iowa College Aid. And so, again, I think a lot of people find themselves in that situation. Post-graduation, they look at their debt load. And you mentioned that a little under $30,000 is average for students in Iowa. But it sounds like Danielle is well within the normal range.
Right. She's not too far above that average. And it sounds like she's making some really smart decisions about budgeting now to get that loan paid off so that it doesn't follow her for any longer than it needs to. One thing that I would urge anybody who is listening who is a parent of a high school kid or younger or a high school student out there, it's really important to explore your financial aid options. And it sounds like she did. She got some federal student loans, and that means that she filled out something called the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And this is a really important form because you cannot get federal Stafford loans without it. You cannot get federal Pell Grants without it. And you won't even qualify for most state-appropriated financial aid without this form, not need-based aid anyway. The sad thing is, every year, less than two-thirds of the graduating high school seniors in Iowa file this form. It doesn't cost anything. Free is right there in the name, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And more than half the people who file it in Iowa qualify for the Pell Grant alone. So it's really important that students explore all of these potential financial aid options that are out there and not get intimidated by the fact that it's a federal form or not get discouraged thinking, oh, I won't qualify. It's really important to explore.
I'm thinking about the point that Danielle is at in her life where she's starting her first job. And of course, one of the first things you do when you start your job, if you're fortunate enough to get benefits, you work through all of those and you start saving for retirement. This is also a time of life when you start thinking about, okay, you know, maybe a few years down the road, I'd like to get married or I'd like to buy a house. Someday I want to be a parent. So with this generation, with the millennial generation who is coming of age with this large amount of student loan debt, how does that affect their ability to save money for the other things that they want to do with their lives?
We do know that it makes it tough. And I've seen studies that show that student loan debt can actually stifle things like entrepreneurship in young people. But again, it sounds like Danielle is making some really good choices about making paying off those loans a priority right now. And if it's at all possible, it's a wonderful idea to pay off more than your minimum payment every month, because just like a mortgage, the sooner you can pay it off, the less you're going to pay in total.
I have a tweet from Shelley. She says, I have advanced degrees and graduated with over $200,000 in debt in 2009. Thankful there's the Public Service Forgiveness Program. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, that having the opportunity to have some of your loans forgiven might influence the direction people go in when they're choosing a career, right?
Yes, and I'm really glad she brought that up. At the state level and the federal level, there are some different programs that will help people in certain careers in certain areas pay off their loans. In Iowa, for instance, and in certain health fields, if you are willing to go to underserved communities, which usually means rural, there are repayment options available. And in education, teachers who go into fields that we know there are teacher shortages, they are open to some repayment help as well. There are also federal grants, as your listener mentioned, for public service. I think even for certain fields within the law, working, for instance, for the Department of Justice, there are options to help get loans repaid. The one thing that I would caution people is these things shift. The geographical areas of need will change over time. And for instance, in education, those shortage areas will change over time. So you don't want anybody to go into a very specific career counting on repayment help being available 4 years down the road when that is a moving target.
I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. I'm talking with Elizabeth Cedrill, spokeswoman for Iowa College Age. Liang Chi-Wee is also with us. He is president of Northeast Iowa Community College. Hello, Wee.
Good morning, Charity. And I want to say hi to my friend Elizabeth from the Iowa College Age.
Good morning, Dr. Wee.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. And we've been talking so far about four-year colleges, the first thing that people tend to think of when they think about higher education. But of course, more and more people are leaning toward community colleges. It can be a much more affordable option for some people. But let's take a look at kind of the student population, Northeast Iowa Community College. How would you say your student population is different from a four-year college?
Well, we are very different. There are 15 community colleges in Iowa, and the way we are set up is we accept everybody, and that means we don't ask them about their ACT or SAT score or their class rank. So anybody literally can walk through our door, and we get to serve them. So our population is extremely diverse. For Northeast Iowa Community College, a majority of our students are part-time, and our average age is 25. So we really reflect the communities we serve.
So you're having a lot more students coming to you a little bit later in life, not right out of high school.
Yes, absolutely. But really, what we do, we have several prongs in terms of addressing this issue. Your listener may not know is that we work with our K-12 schools very well. For example, we have about 25 school districts. We go in and talk to them about careers all the way in the middle school just to engage them. We engage the parents. And, of course, the Iowa College Aid, we have financial aid night with them. And one of the other things that we also do is work with our employers. Many of them, they have employees who are coming back for further education. And employers, they do have tuition reimbursement opportunity, many of them. And so what we try to do is help our students understand the different ways that they can put a package together that allows them to minimize the debt, but also allow them to move ahead in life.
Well, and Elizabeth, I'd love to hear some of the facts and figures from you. As I mentioned, we were talking mostly about four-year degrees earlier, although community college is increasingly, as I mentioned, a more affordable option for people. So how does it break down as far as the cost-benefit analysis when you look at the value of going to community college?
There again, it's going to depend on the specific school. So I would encourage people to do their research, look at graduation rates. That's really important. And then again, the average debt coming out of the school. And I will tell you that there are some forms of state appropriated financial aid here in Iowa that are specifically for students at the community colleges.
And when someone goes to community college, let's say for 2 years, and comes out with an associate degree, what kind of value does that have for them in the world of employment?
When we look at the wage figures that I was talking about earlier, we do see a bump with the associate degree. There's a bigger bump if you go 2 years more to the four-year degree, but we do see a rise in salary coming with that two-year degree. And it's also important to remember that community college can be a really good place to start, even if you're headed for a four-year degree, especially if you're not quite certain where you want that four-year degree to be. Community college is a more affordable option that lets you explore some different areas before you commit.
Well, and Dr. Wee, let's talk about that. Is that something that you recommend to students at Northeast Iowa Community College, that maybe they start with you and move on to a four-year college later, take those credits with them?
Absolutely. And we always have a start with a conversation with our students. When they come in, we ask them what they would like to do. And that's why our partnership with the K-12 school is so important, is to start them thinking early. In fact, in the K-12 schools, we do job shadowing. We do visits to businesses. So just to expand the horizon of the students and the parents. But when they come and look at a college like ours, we have all the programs available, but the key thing is, where do they want to go? As Elizabeth mentioned, some of our students, many of them actually go on to 4 year. So for us is to look at what their ultimate goal is and work backwards and say, this is where you are and how do we get there? And I can tell you, some of the students we see already have debt from a previous engagement at another institution. So we have colleagues who will sit down with them and just say, do you know that as of today, this is your debt obligation without investing another penny at Northeast Iowa Community College?
We're talking about the high cost of higher education this hour. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And John is on the line in Mason City. Hi, John.
Hey, Charity. Good to speak with you.
It's nice to talk to you, too. And you want to talk about some alternatives that we haven't brought up yet.
I do, exactly. Every time that we speak about education, I think it behooves us to mention that there are alternatives to attending just a traditional college. Things like labor and trades programs, which is the path that I took. When I was going through high school about two decades ago, there was a huge push to get everybody to go to college, and that was kind of always mentioned, but nobody seemed to mention labor and trades programs. And luckily for me, I had an industrial arts teacher who just kind of, you know, mentioned it one day, and it sparked my interest, and I got into that, you know, into the field. I became an electrician, and my education was 100% paid for through a union labor trades program. I earned a Associates of General Studies from DMAC off of that that educational experience, and, you know, ended up with a career where I make a significant amount of money, and it was completely debt-free. So I think that, you know, when everybody's looking at options out there, labor and trades programs are definitely a good one, and there's a huge shortage of tradesmen out there at this time. There's a high demand for electricians and plumbers and welders.
And do you feel like you just kind of got lucky with someone giving you that guidance?
I think it was just a matter of luck that at that point in time, when that one industrial arts teacher mentioned that there were labor and trades programs out there, I was paying attention at the time. You know, I mean, I was fully intending when I was in high school to go into college and, you know, do, you know, two decades ago, the computer industry was, you know, going off like crazy. And that's where I thought my future was going to be. Unfortunately, I learned really quick that college just wasn't for me. I can't manage to stand still long enough to pay attention in class. So, you know, I needed something where I could work with my hands and, you know, be active and just have a little bit of diversity. And I mean, it's just a lot. You can make a lot of money in trades.
Well, and John, it sounds like
I'm out of it completely debt free.
Right. You got some great advice. Do you feel like maybe that pathway is not talked about enough for students?
I really don't think so. I mean, I really don't think that that's pushed a lot. When, you know, when I don't know now, it's been two decades since I've been in high school, but when I was in high school, no student counselors or other teachers ever mentioned labor and trades programs. And there were no, you know, huge career fairs that the kids went to that, you know, featured labor and trades. And I think that's just something that, you know, could always be brought up. Not every student is the same. Not every person is meant to go to college. Not everybody's going to be successful in it, but there's a, you know, a possibility that folks are going to be extremely successful going through, you know, a more hands-on program where they can learn, you know, a practical skill and, you know, apply that.
Right.
Their future.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Still with me, Elizabeth Cedrill, spokeswoman for Iowa College Age, and Liang Chi Wei, president of Northeast Iowa Community College. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the high cost of higher education. We're continuing our series of conversations about big ideas in partnership with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. The Gazette is hosting a nonpartisan statewide learning experience in conjunction with the launch of their new magazine, Iowa Ideas, and they'll be at the Iowa Memorial Union in Iowa City tomorrow. The focus is on higher education. With me right now, Elizabeth Cedrill. She is spokeswoman for Iowa College Age. And Liang Chi Wei, president of Northeast Iowa Community College. And I want to read an email that we received from Kevin, who he says he's a retired advising coordinator from Iowa State University. And he says, first of all, to me, the saddest result of the current high cost of college education is that students sometimes choose a major based on the ability to earn enough after graduation to pay loans back. This may be practical, but it's a terrible way to choose one's life. The second point is it's really important to choose the appropriate career direction for each individual. No matter how certain high school students are of career plans, in college, most students learn things about their chosen fields and other fields they may not have previously considered. This new information often gives rise to consideration of entirely different life directions. I urge students and parents to seek ways to make it possible for the student to pursue the student's real love. Thank you so much for that email, Kevin. And Elizabeth, I'll let you respond to that first. I mean, we heard from John earlier, who feels like he got just a little bit of the right advice at the right time. Kevin saying, you know, we can't pick our careers based on how much money we think we're going to make. And there's so much pressure on a graduating senior to make these huge life decisions, not quote unquote, waste time in college, changing majors and figuring out what they want to do. What do you tell parents about that part of the decision-making process?
There is a lot of pressure because this is a life-changing decision, and you're looking at high school juniors and seniors, 17 and 18-year-old kids. So one of the best things that they can do is do some research. If you've got a high school student who's thinking, oh, this is a career I might want to go into, don't wait until you get to college and start taking courses in that area to assess whether this is really for you. Talk to people who are working in that field. Talk to students who are currently studying that subject area. And if you don't know any personally, talk to your counselor. Ask your parents if they have contacts. The more you can learn before you make that decision about what to study and where to go, the better off you're going to be.
Well, and Dr. Wei, I know that for a lot of students who don't know what they want to do, more and more people are pushing them toward community college. What kind of opportunity do you give young students or older students too to explore different career possibilities so they can make those choices in an informed way?
And that's why I think our work with our K-12 school and those who are non-traditional is look at the options. John brought up a very good point about apprenticeship, and that's what he was referring to. 60% of our students are in the career technical education area. So for us, I agree totally that we really need to look at the talents and gifts of the students and set them on the path. But one thing that we also remind the family is that where the starting point is does not mean that it dictates the entire life of the student. But knowing where is a good starting point is very important. Let me share a website with your listening audience, if that's okay.
Sure.
It's www.elevateiowa, one word, elevateiowa.com. And this is a partnership between the Association of Business and Industry and Community Colleges. And that website really tells the story of how we really try to bring up the passion of the students, set them on the good path, and tons of resources, tons of video of success stories. And John is right. Sometimes we don't tell enough of this, and this is something we need to do more of, is to let parents and students know that there are many, many options out there.
Let's go back to the phones. Darren is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Darren.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And so we were just talking about other options. You looked into that too, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the things that's often overlooked is the opportunity for people to, in some cases, come out completely debt-free with just a little bit of extra work on their part. So I spent almost 7 years on the active duty Air Force, and my education was paid for in part by scholarships and in part by the GI Bill. And, excuse me, Iowa has a very generous program through the National Guard services to pay for higher education, and many other states are the same, especially if attending a state school.
And you feel like that was the right choice for you?
Absolutely.
Other than having your education paid for, do you feel like there have been other benefits?
Sure. There are great benefits when it comes to health care, job opportunities. So not only would you receive aid in higher education that you would normally think about colleges, universities, but you also learn a lot of skills on the job in your what we would call an Air Force specialty code or an MOS in the Army, in your job type, that can lead to certifications and things like that that you can take outside of the military services to the civilian world.
Well, Darren, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. We're talking about the high cost of higher education, some ideas for coping with that this hour. With me, Elizabeth Cedrill. She is spokeswoman for Iowa College Age, and Liang Chi Wei, president of Northeast Iowa Community College. And I want to go to Robert on the line in Windsor Heights. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how are you?
Good. And so you know this story about student loan debt incredibly well. Tell us about your story.
I just wanted to say was that, you know, I mean, I've been listening, and a lot of what the discussion in the show has been is, you know, about planning going forward when you're, you know, you're graduating from high school and you're looking to, you know, get your career track and that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people, myself included, who sort of have a student loan debt monkey on their backs. And in my case, I've long since paid off the principal, but the interest has accumulated over the years when I was unemployed and stuff like that. So there's no real possibility of me paying it off before I die, because I'm like I say, I'm 68 years old. I'm semi-retired. But what I just wanted to say was that there is an income-based repayment for people who are of, you know, of limited means, and in my particular case, when it started in 2009, I went from having to pay $1,500 a month down to about $200 a month, and it's pegged on your disposable income. But the most important thing I would say to anybody out there who is listening to this is, do not default on your existing loans. Don't ever do that, because not only will that trash your credit rating, such as it may be, but it will also disqualify you from taking advantage of many income-based repayment programs.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Some hard-earned wisdom there. And Elizabeth, you want to follow up on that?
Robert's exactly right. A default on your loans will follow you for a long, long time. And you actually don't even have to default in order to hurt your credit rating. Even missed payments will hurt your credit rating. So if you do start to get into trouble, it's really important to speak up right away. Talk to your lender. With federal student loans, there are certain conditions that will allow for a deferment, certain forms of hardship. So it's important to check those out. Don't wait until you're in too deep before you ask what options are available.
And before we move on, I want to ask you, here's an email from Jason in Bondurant, and I know a lot of parents are listening to this. He says, I'm listening to your show on the cost of college. I have three kids, first grade, preschool, 2 years old, and three college savings plans. Wondering how much is a reasonable amount to put in my kids' college funds in order to get a decent payoff for their education. Is there some kind of online tool that can help me visualize how what I pay now will benefit 15 years down the road. He says, I am also almost finished paying off my undergraduate student loan. So a lot of parents are in that situation where they're paying off their student loans and trying to pay for college for their kids. How do they decide how much to save?
Well, first of all, congratulations on being a parent who is thinking about this so early. This is going to put your kids in such a good position when it's time to start figuring out how to finance their education. Again, I would refer people to a publication we put out that's free. It's called Planning for Our Future. It's available through our website, iowacollegeaid.gov, and it shows you a certain amount of money and how far it will go over a certain number of years, depending on when you start. It's hard to know because you don't know right now what kind of college options your kids are going to consider. Are they going to want private school? Are they going to go the community college transfer to a Regent University route? All of that would play into how much money you need to have. But if you want to know how far your money will go investing it right now, that's a good resource.
All right. Well, Elizabeth Cedrill, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Charity.
Elizabeth Cedrill, spokeswoman for Iowa College Aid. Liang Chi Wei, thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much.
Liang Chi Wei is president of Northeast Iowa Community College. And we've been talking about the way that higher education is right now. Christopher Morphew is a professor and executive associate dean in the University of Iowa College of Education. He has a big idea for what financing college educations might look like in the future. Hello, Christopher.
Hi, Charity. How you doing?
Oh, good. Thank you so much for being here today. And all right, dealing with high tuition is something that a lot of parents, a lot of young people, a lot of students have to deal with today. You're talking about proposing a new funding model for the region's universities in Iowa. What's your idea?
Well, we're going to be talking about this tomorrow at the Iowa Ideas Conference that you mentioned that's sponsored by the Gazette. Looking forward to it. I've been listening to a little bit of the conversation that occurred earlier, and I know what's being discussed is this fear of college costs and the sense that we can't afford college, and I think that's a very real fear. And part of what's happened historically in Iowa is we've been a part of what I would call a low tuition, low aid model for a long time in this state. But as tuition has gotten higher and higher and higher, the lack of a strong need-based aid state need-based aid program has really gotten in the way of access. So right now, attending a Regents University, Iowa State, University of Northern Iowa, or the University of Iowa has become prohibitively expensive for students who come from, say, Pell Grant backgrounds. So what I'm going to be proposing is actually something that might sound counterintuitive to your listeners, and that is the need, in fact, to raise tuition at Regents universities to provide for better access for low-income Iowans.
All right. How does that work? Because it does sound counterintuitive.
It does. So as I mentioned, historically, the Iowa Regents have done their best to hold tuition down, and they've done actually a pretty good job of that. Iowa State and UNI among their peer groups are have relatively low tuition. The problem is as tuition has gotten above, say, a $3,000-$4,000 mark, and Pell Grant federal Pell Grant dollars and have not kept up with that, the gap between the total cost of attendance and the aid that's available to lower cost Iowans has increased to the point where we're talking about at the University of Iowa something around $12,000 between the gap of expected family contribution and the total cost of attendance for students. So what that means is that all of the Regents universities have disproportionately high numbers of students from families with higher incomes, and we actually don't do a good job of serving students from low incomes. What raising tuition would do, if in fact the state required and the university put in place a guaranteed plan along with that to provide better access for low-income Iowans, what raising tuition could do is provide the Regents universities with some room to use the extra revenue they can generate from tuition to provide the need-based aid program that the state does not provide. So in essence, what the state could ask the universities to do and what the universities could guarantee is they could actually improve on the number of low-income Iowans for, say, from the lowest quintile of incomes in the state, their attendance at the university, and they could demonstrate this and improve on this over time, whereas right now we do a very poor job of serving those Iowans at the three Regents universities.
So we would be depending on the families that can afford to pay mm-hmm. the higher tuition to subsidize this need program.
Right. Our approach essentially has been to provide this large general subsidy to all Iowans to attend Regents University, and that approach is an approach that lots of states use. Another approach, however, is to provide a smaller subsidy and to Iowans, and then to allow, as tuition goes up, to allow directed subsidies, if you will, in the form of institutional grant aid to be provided to lower-income Iowans to make sure that they have the same privilege and access to the Regents Universities as upper-income Iowans do.
Are there other states that have implemented this kind of plan?
Yeah, there are. There's a number of states that have large need-based aid programs. So you look at states like New York or California, and they have very large need-based aid programs that are actually either entitlement programs or programs that have been put in place, and the state has maintained a historic commitment to them. In 2005, the state of Virginia adopted what's called the University the State Higher Education Restructuring Act, and allowed universities that had very good bond ratings and very good financial balance sheets to engage in a contract, essentially, with the state, where they said they would be granted greater autonomy, and in exchange for that autonomy, which part of which included the ability to set their own tuition, these universities would guarantee that they would provide better access than they had in the past for low-income Virginia residents. And there's data available at UVA's website and some of the other universities' websites that documents how they've tried to do this over time and actually been able to maintain better access for low-income Virginians as tuition has gone up.
So they really feel that it's working.
Yeah, there is some evidence that it's working in these other states, and certainly in states like California and New York and some other states. Washington State would be another example of this, where they have strong need-based aid programs. Their data on the percentage of low-income residents in the state that attend the flagship and land-grant universities, they look much better than us. Right now, for example, the University of Iowa ranks 374th out of 377 public selective institutions in terms of the percentage of students from families with incomes below $20,000. So we're near the bottom.
Iowa is a small state, only three state universities. Do you feel like that is what has helped us stay in the mode that we've been in with the system that we've been using?
Well, I would argue the Regents have actually been have done a very good job historically. If you look at the reason the Regents were established in 1925, the big concern at the time at the state was they wanted to ensure that this university system didn't get too expensive and too duplicative. And the Regents have actually done a very good job of that. So we have one medical school, we have one veterinary school, we have one law school. These are expensive things, and we have a system that is really, unlike most other states out there, not too small and not too big. We're sort of just right size system, and we've got two AAU universities. We've got, which is, you know, the more than Ohio has in terms of public AAU universities. So we've done historically very well. I don't think the size of our system is as much a problem as the lack of a strong state need based aid program.
All right. Well, Christopher Morphew, thank you so much for talking with me.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Charity.
Christopher Morphew, professor and executive associate dean in the University of Iowa College of Education. He'll be presenting tomorrow at the Iowa Ideas Symposium, hosted by the Cedar Rapids Gazette at the Iowa Memorial Union in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.